Thank you very much indeed. Good morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC Three Counties Radio. Lots coming up on the show this morning, as always. We'd like your calls on as many of these subjects as we can. So some of the things we're talking about include Hertfordshire police are hoping the jailing of a Watford man who threatened to kill his ex will encourage other victims to come forward. But would you have the confidence to speak up? A little while ago, we did a story about a blind lady went into a baker's with a guide dog, and they said, yeah, I'm sorry, love, you can't come in with that dog. Well, it's happened again, not in the same bakery, but to the same woman. And it's Movember. We're asking, moustache, must-have, or mistake? Look at them high-fiving next door that they got me to say those words. Oh, well done. Facebook.com/BBC3CR. Send me a text, 81333. Start your text 3CR. Or why don't you give me a phone call, 08459 455 555.
Across Beds, hearts and bucks.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.
Hertfordshire police hope the jailing of a Watford man who threatened to kill his ex-girlfriend will encourage more people trapped in abusive relationships to speak up. 31-year-old Craig Britton had been physically abusive throughout the couple's relationship, even when his partner was pregnant. But the final straw came last August when he doused her and himself with lighter fuel and threatened to kill them both. Well, he's been jailed for two and a half years. Is that all? It's terrible. Well, he's been jailed for 2.5 years, and that is thanks to his ex's courage in giving evidence. Must be a terrifying thing to do. Colleen Kelly is from MK Act, a service for survivors of domestic abuse. 2.5 years, Colleen, for something as horrific and as abusive as that, it doesn't really sound a lot. Is that the kind of normal sentencing, do you think?
Well, I think the judges have got strict criteria to follow when they are sentencing abusers. But I guess when you've described the circumstances that you have, Ian, and then talked about kind of the punishment, it is hard to see sometimes how the punishment fits the crime.
How familiar is this kind of story to you, Colleen?
Well, our service provides, as you mentioned, it provides a victim for survivors of domestic abuse. So we hear horrific stories every day when people come in and tell us what's gone on in their personal lives, and some may have reported that to the police and some may not have.
I struggle to imagine, and we know it happens both ways, men and women, but I would struggle to imagine why anybody would stay with someone who was violent or who was verbally abusive and bullying. But obviously people do. What's the psychology behind that, Colleen?
I think what happens is that people start off in a relationship because they care for somebody and they love somebody. And then as abuse happens, there's all sorts of things that go on, including intimidation, fear, love, all sorts of a different mix of emotions. And people, as you say, people can feel incredibly trapped and not know how to get help or how to get out.
Do the police offer much help?
I think they do. I think the police actually, I think in the past there may have been some criticisms of the police, but I think that their response has just, in the time that I've worked for the agency that I have, for MK Act, their response has really improved, and they've got a lot of knowledge and expertise now in dealing with very sensitive and very difficult issues.
And what does MK Act do? How do you help people?
Well, we're a support service, and we've got a helpline, so what people can do is ring us, and they don't initially need to tell us their details. We're a confidential helpline. And we can talk through safety plans with them, and we can talk to them about risk, and they can tell us what's happening to them, and then they can come in and see an advisor and get some one-to-one support.
I suppose part of the fear of the victim is the controlling aspect of their partner. So even making a phone call or daring to come in to speak to someone must be terrifying.
I think for some people, for some of the people that we see, there's such a high level of control that they're actually monitored by their partners. And of course, now with technology, monitoring phone calls and kind of who you ring and who you contact, potentially you could leave a trail for somebody to follow in terms of how you're accessing help. So it's quite a brave step. But, we always feel it's incredibly brave when people make the first contact with us, and we may be the first person they've ever spoken to about what's happening within their relationship.
I'm going to ask something that might sound a little bit inappropriate, and tell me if it is. Is there any help for the abuser at all?
No, I think that's a really important question to ask, because one of the things that we want to change is, that people who are using abusive behaviours, that, you know, that there is some way of dealing with that, some kind of treatment, some way to make sure that actually, you know, often when we support people, we don't want their abuser to leave that relationship, you know, for us to get that person safe. And then the abuser to go on and get into a relationship with somebody else, and them come into our service.
Mm.
So, you know, we actively want there to be an intervention that will reduce the risk. And, you know, really this is about what type of life do people have if, not just the victim, obviously we're very victim-focused, but, you know, what type of life does an abuser have if actually the focus of their life is around controlling somebody else.
And so it's your belief that the abuser can change?
I hope so. I'm an optimist. I do hope I think that some abusers can change. Some people, obviously, you know, their behaviour, their mindsets, the way that they think, they're not open to change. But I think there are some people that are.
Colleen, if people want to get in touch with MK Act, how do they do that?
There's several ways. We've got a helpline number on our... Shall I give you the helpline number?
Yes, please, go on.
It's 0844 375 4307.
Brilliant. Colleen, thank you very much. Keep up the good work. That's Colleen Kelly from MK Act, 08459 455555. Morning, Ian Lee, BBC Three Counties Radio, 08459 455555. Some of you ladies, will be growing moustaches for Movember. Well, William Hanson, etiquette expert and indeed friend of this show, I use that term very loosely for legal reasons, said, no. Don't grow a moustache for Movember. Go and bake a cake or go and write a cheque. If you want to be taken seriously at work, don't wear a moustache. Well, is he right? Do we laugh at people with moustaches unless they're private eyes from the 1980s? 08459 455 555. It's 6:15, BBC Three Counties Radio. Let's get the travel news now. Here's Alice.
You're so paranoid.
So paranoid, Catherine. She's listening to that song. You may have heard me tapping away. My microphone was on for the whole thing. I was buying shirts from Marks and Spencer's online. That's what I was doing. The only place that does extra sleep. Anyway, Catherine Boyle, you're so paranoid with the jumping out game, Catherine. You're hearing things where there aren't things.
There was
now.
Lots of, it sounded like someone was jumping out. That's all.
Can we just tell the story? So, we mentioned before, we have a little game here where we all like to... We all like to try and like that.
That was Kelly Betts.
We all like to try and scare each other first thing in the morning, and we find ingenious places to hide. I hid under a table for 10 minutes trying to grab Kelly Betts' leg, and then she found me.
Think Cato.
Yes, very much so. Justin Dealey's face as he came up the stairs this morning. Hey, Catherine, what were you doing to try and get me this morning?
I saw you arrive through the CCTV.
Yep.
I thought, I'll get in the cupboard. So I'm sitting in the cupboard in the pitch black. I thought, this time I'm going to film it. I'm going to have him.
Yeah.
So I was in the cupboard, and my breathing got really shallow in there.
Yeah.
You know,
it's very scary.
Waiting for the moment. I heard the door click, heard a couple of footsteps. I burst out! You'd gone in the kitchen!
Wasn't there? You just burst out into an empty corridor. Imagine that.
What a letdown!
What you are. You certainly are, Catherine. You see what happens? Your licence fee is paying for this. I hope that makes you happy. 08459 455 555. Now, here's an incredible story. In August. Was it August, really? Gosh, hasn't it gone quickly? I told you about a partially sighted woman from Watford who was told that she couldn't bring her guide dog into a shop in St Albans. She was told to leave it outside. It was a baker's. Well, it's happened again to the same woman, this time in the Watford branch of Subway. The chain says this is against policy. Well, it's not just against policy, it's against the law, and has promised to investigate the incident. Well, Sue Rowan is from Beds and Hearts Guide Dogs for the Blind. She's also a friend of the woman in question, Emma Hamford. Sue, is Emma going around asking for this? What's going on here?
Morning. Yeah, no, unfortunately she's not. She's just...
She's not a troublemaker.
No. No, she's living her daily life. She works for an organisation where she visits a number of people around Hertfordshire. She's actually has a hearing difficulty as well, and she advises on different hearing aids, etc. So she gets out and about quite often around and about Hertfordshire, and it's just in her daily life. And unfortunately, it seems to be when she's going for lunch for her sandwich or her takeaway that she encounters these particular difficulties.
So what happened in this case? Do we know?
I spoke to her last night, and she did say that when she went into the shop, she queued and she was given her lunch. And when she got to the cashier, the person actually said, no dogs. And as is usually the practice, we advise all our guide dog owners when they come across this difficulty to ask for the manager. Because more often than not, the person who is refusing the dog or the service is because they don't know the difference between a working dog or a pet dog. And that, you know, in terms of the Health and Hygiene Act, and of course, as you mentioned in the law, which is the Equality Act, that guide dogs are a mobility aid. So, of course, nobody can refuse services to somebody who has one. Normally, the manager knows about it, and in this case, the manager did. But she was very sort of short and curt about it. And I think that what upset Emma the most, I spoke to her last night, is that there wasn't any apology at all. And I don't think that a lot of people realize how humiliating and embarrassing this kind of situation can be for somebody who is blind or partially sighted. It does ruin the whole day. Life is difficult enough when you have a disability. And I don't think a lot of people realize just how upsetting this type of situation can be.
And you come across cases like this quite often, don't you, unfortunately?
We do, unfortunately. As I say, it's more often an ignorance about the difference between a working dog and a pet dog. In a lot of cases, it's shops or restaurants that are the smaller establishments. We don't find that difficulty with very large supermarkets.
But Subway is a huge chain. I know, I imagine it's franchised, but it's a huge chain. You would think that a company as big as that, it's not a small independent thing, would know the law.
Well, I'm sure that they do know the law. The difficulty is that with a franchise like this, they just do the, they just use the franchise. But the individual who runs that particular shop or establishment is responsible for inducting their staff in terms of how to serve customers and that kind of thing. And I think the break in the chain is that in a lot of cases, the staff are those who are perhaps your temporary staff that come and go quite often. And in a lot of cases, it's staff where there's a language barrier, which is why the manager knows what's going on, but perhaps they haven't given the right instruction to their staff about serving those with disability, in particular assistance dogs. Because we're not talking just about guide dogs, we're talking about other service dogs as well.
Sue, listen, can we not talk about this in the next couple of months? Can everybody sort this out and understand the law, please? Because it would be so disappointing to get you on again and say, we've got another story of this happening.
Well, we are continuing to work right throughout the county.
Good.
To try and raise the awareness. We have got some, you know, we continue awareness. We continue doing awareness in the schools as well because it's your up-and-coming generations. And, yes, we just continue to raise the awareness as best as we can.
Sue, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Sue Rowan from Beds, Hearts and Guide Dogs for the Blind. We have a statement from Subway, which I'm kind of, I'm half not wanting to read because they've given an instruction at the end. Please note, this quote must be attributed to a spokesperson from the Subway brand. Oh, dear. We want to reassure our customers that working dogs are always allowed in Subway stores. Well, hang on a minute. We are aware of an incident at the Watford Parade store and are investigating the case. Please note this quote must be attributed to a spokesperson from the Subway brand. Oh, dear, Subway. Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Your mother should know. I like that song. I like the video for that song as well. They're walking down the stairs in their white tie and tails doing that. It's brilliant. It's from Magical Mystery Tour, which is an unwatchable film. Awful, awful film. But features excellent videos for this song. And I Am the Walrus. Wonderful stuff. Thank you, Beatles. Here's the travel.
Call 08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC Three Counties Radio. I'm about to look at the newspapers with her.
Hi.
08459 455 555 if you'd like to take part. Morning, Ian Lee, BBC Three Counties Radio. If you want to give us a call, for this section of the show, Catherine Boyle comes in.
Yes.
And we look at the newspapers. If you want to take part, it's relaxed. You're probably too young to remember this the programme, Catherine. There was a programme called House Party.
Knowles?
No, not Knowles House Party. It was on in about sort of 1 o'clock in the afternoon in, I would say, 1979. And it was hosted by a woman called Mavis something. My mum used to love it. And it was before we had proper daytime TV. So this is a new phenomenon. And this woman, it was like set in her house, but it wasn't. And she'd be there talking to her friend Susan about crochet. And then the doorbell would go, she'd go, oh, excuse me, Susan, I must just go and see the... Oh, it's Deirdre. Deirdre, come in. You've brought some ingredients with you. You're going to bake something. Well, yes, Mavis, today I'm going to show you how to bake cakes. And it was they did things like that.
They should bring that back.
They should do. But they've got loose women. That's the equivalent.
Not enough crochet on that.
Horrible orange women being rude about people. Oh, dearie me. Anyway, this... bit here is kind of like House Party, not Noel's, and that you can drop in whenever you want.
Oh, is that at the door?
Ding dong, it's Sammy the Shammy. 08459 455 555. What have you... someone's dropped in. Who's this on Vader 3? Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, who's this? What's your name, sir?
Good morning, boss. It's JD, your reporter.
Oh,
it's J-Dog.
How you doing, guys?
I'm good, thank you, J-Dog.
Good.
Do you want to go through the papers with us?
If you want to, yeah.
Why not? Sure.
I'm game.
You're what?
I'm game.
Ah. Catherine, what have you found?
I found... something, and it is this. No.
Sounds like she's filling, doesn't it?
Ooh, yeah.
I'll tell you what I found.
I've turned the page over on nothing.
Well, professional, yeah.
I know, very, very poor. Mm. There's...
Oh, I know. A struggling church has managed to boost its dwindling congregation by handing out free beer to parched parishioners in Fort Worth, Texas.
It would be in America, wouldn't it? Free beer, and then when you leave, you get a free gun with two free bullets, probably. You know, that's what they do over there, don't they?
Crazy guys.
Is that your contribution to that story?
That was it. That was a sunspot.
Okay. The Daily Mail, page 7. Father who's floored by the scent of Chanel No. 5. Plenty of women would love to find a perfume that knocks their husband off his feet. But Carrie Parry, what? Is desperate for one that doesn't. A mere whiff of her Charlie is enough to make husband Glynn fall to the ground.
Not Charlie, it's Chanel No. 5.
I know, I was making cheap innuendo. And the consequences can be severe. The father of three suffers from a rare condition that causes him to collapse if he comes into contact with things that smell nice.
Oh, so only foul odours allowed.
Only foul odours allowed. Wouldn't be able to get near you, would he, JD?
I was going to say, I can find him a few ladies if he wants. Put him in contact with me, no problem.
Okay.
Telly host Jeremy Paxman has admitted he did not vote at a recent election, despite blasting Russell Brand on air about the issue. Did he blast him? I noticed a little bit of manly flirting going on.
They were flirting, weren't they?
Comic Brand, 38, in case you're interested in his age, told Paxman on Newsnight he'd never voted because of absolute indifference and weariness and exhaustion from the lies, treachery and deceit of the political classes.
Are you doing the voice?
No.
That was quite good.
Paxman responded, if you can't be... I'm not going to say what Paxman said. Frankly, a man of his intellect should be able to manage something other than that word. Let's just say, if you can't be arxed to vote, why should we be arxed to listen to your political point of view?
I do think... Listen, I don't really... Russell Brand, I thought most of his rant was childish sixth form tosh. But...
I admired his cheek for trying it on, though.
I do think that not voting is a valid form of protest.
I voted and got told off for voting. We all got told off for voting last time around, didn't we?
Yeah, we didn't do it right. Mm. I think that not voting, I think it is a valid form of protest. 08459 455 555. Are you a voter, J-Dog?
Of course. Yeah? Everyone's got the right to vote, and I think personally it should be made law in this country.
Really?
That you have that right, yes. Okay.
Sorry?
You are given the right to vote, okay?
Yes.
So you should go out and vote.
Right.
Because what people do, they don't vote and then they moan about it.
No.
Go and vote.
You are given the right to vote, but that means you are also, by definition, ipso facto, given the right to not vote.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, in this country, that's my firm belief, that every single year we have the same conversations, the voting numbers are this, the voting numbers are that. Well, if everyone went out and they had that vote, we wouldn't be having that conversation, because that's come up every single year.
We wouldn't be having that conversation, but we might be having different conversations. In some places, your vote will not make a difference. There are some really safe Tory seats and some really safe Labour seats. Your vote will not make a difference. So... And there were many who would argue that the politicians, they're all the same, aren't they?
They are the same, but still, go out and try and make a difference.
Oh, listen to the birds. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's another story in here, Justin, that I think maybe you should go and have a look at. The Daily Telegraph, page 5. Movember, hold a cake sale instead. Now, Movember is this silly month where people grow a moustache.
Usually men.
Moustache.
For what is it for? Testicular cancer?
Yeah.
Something like
prostate,
that.
Isn't
prostate,
isn't it?
Prostate. Something like that, yes. Well, William Hansen, who's popped up on this show from time to time, he's an etiquette expert, has said the men would be better off holding a cake sale or giving money directly to charity. You will not be... Growing a novelty moustache is really not advisable. Growing a novelty moustache is really not advisable, especially if you have a serious job. I'm yet to see a man who looks better for growing the moustache, and I think a lot of men enjoy it. The idea is it means they can save I'm shaving in the morning.
You're doing a voice.
That's Hanson. Now, I would dispute. I think some men, Magnum, John Cleese, look better with moustaches. Some men don't, Ian Beale.
Yeah. A man with a long lip needs to put something on that.
Yeah.
Wispy whiskers. No.
No, no,
Ian
no.
Beale had a wispy moustache.
Yes, he couldn't grow up. You want to grow thick, bristly hair. Justin, you ever grown a moustache?
No, I haven't, actually. I don't think that I could. But you know what? This month, I think, is all about having a bit of a laugh and also raising money for a very good cause. So I think these comments are absolutely ridiculous. If somebody walked into our office this morning and they had a tash, we would take them seriously, wouldn't we, Ian?
Mm,
no?
Well...
Would you not think, do you know what, you're doing it for a very good cause, good on you. You wouldn't look down on somebody if they had a tash.
I'll tell you what I'd like to do. Can you get a vox on this, please, Justin? Go and see what the people of Beds, Hearts and Bucks think. And you obviously believe very passionately about this. When we get William Hanson on later on in the show, would you come on and have a chat with him?
Oh, yes, I will.
Would you be up for that?
I'll have a go at him, actually, but yeah.
Excellent. All right, I look forward to that. Justin, off you go. See you later.
Thank you, Ian.
Ta-ta. 08459 455 555. You've got a moustache. Did they have you off?
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Do they ever look good? Really, they don't, do they? They look a little bit silly. Has William Hanson got a point? Instead of growing a moustache for Movember, just write them a cheque or go and sell some stuff on eBay or something like that. 08459 455 555. This is BBC Three Counties Radio, 645. Dennis is on the line. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Ian.
What can I do for you, boss?
Last night, just for a fraction of a second, we saw pictures of you on BBC One.
Oh, yes.
Advertising something.
Oh.
And I thought...
Hang on a second. I was advertising what?
God knows, I don't know. I was looking at you, I thought you were fascinating.
The BBC have spent, and I can reveal this figure, £370,000 on that advert.
Yes.
Or somewhere between £1 and £370,000. I'm not quite sure of the exact figures. And yet you saw it and you don't know what it was for?
No, I was fascinated by you. I shouted to my wife, come and have a look at this idiot. But she didn't get there in time. So I've had my...
Win! Come and have a look at this blooming idiot on the telly. Win! Win! Will you get it? Oh, he's gone now, Win, you silly old fool.
Exactly. That was exactly what I said. Yes. But she's given me...
Get my dinner, Win! Get it now!
She's given me earache.
Win, I've fallen on the floor! Come and pick me up, Win!
Yes, Dennis.
Right. But I looked at... You're talking about moustaches.
It's an advert for this show.
Is it? Good. Well, I shall watch it in future. Now then, you're asking about whether you should wear moustaches.
Yes.
I reckon that if you get Poirot's moustache, that quirly little thing,
yes,
which has now been given to the actor who played it, he's given it to him as a gift, ask him to, could you borrow it and stick it on? I think you'd look great. People would pay a fortune to come and laugh at you.
Okay. I bet back in your day when you were a young man, back in the 1800s, you had a little spivvy moustache, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
A little pencil thing.
I was in the Navy at the time, and you can't grow one or the other. You've got to grow the full set.
Yes.
So I tried to grow the full set, thinking it was going to be blonde. Unfortunately, it turned out white.
Oh, dear.
even at an early age, I was going white.
Dennis, the music is starting. That means the time is up. Would you like to introduce Gloria by Laura Branigan?
No.
Okay. Talking about voting this morning, after Russell Brand came out and said he never voted, well, Paxman said he didn't vote once. I kind of think that not voting is a valid form of protest. It's your right to not vote if you want to. Am I hideously out of step with all of you? 08459 455 555. Well, Helen in Milton Keynes has texted in. She says, there's no point in voting, as those in office and those seeking office are not fit or suitable to represent us. The latest MP's expenses scandal, where numerous MPs are expecting us to pay their gas, electric bills and demand a large increase as they don't get enough. I've always voted, but will not be doing so next year in local and EU elections. What do you think? 08459 455 555. Also, can anybody look good with a moustache? I know Movember is a bit of fun, but has etiquette expert William Hanson got it right when he says, no, don't grow a moustache, just write them a cheque? Facebook.com/BBC3CR. Now, commuters are generally a brassed off bunch, and who can blame them? Paying hundreds of pounds a month for a ticket to travel cheek by jowl with a whole bunch of other cheesed off types every day is hardly living the dream. But there's one thing that's winding them up even more. I'm joined by Greater Anglia customer Tim Griffiths from Bishop Stortford. What's your beef, Tim?
Well, I started travelling into London on the train in August. I had to go in on an occasional basis and noticed that my ticket was checked fairly frequently. They didn't seem to pay much attention to checking it.
Oh.
And during September, I bought a monthly season ticket, and when I went through Bishop Stortford, they didn't seem to check it at all. They looked at it, but they didn't seem to pay much attention to it. There's no barriers there, so you just walk straight through onto the platform. Very few on-train ticket inspectors, and similarly at Tottenham Hale when they got off. No one there checking it when you got off. Loads of people looking at tickets but not really checking them when you get on the train. I thought, well, let's try a little experiment. So when that monthly season ticket ran out at the end of September, I duly renewed it, but put my new ticket behind my old ticket in my ticket wallet.
Oh, okay. So you're flashing the old one?
I'm flashing the old one, the out-of-date one, that very clearly says it's out-of-date. And bear in mind that the date as printed on the ticket is by far the largest font,
yes,
print size on the ticket, probably double everything else that's printed on the ticket.
And did anybody notice?
Very few. Oh. Every morning when I went through Bishop Stortford Station, I showed my old out-of-date ticket, and no one noticed that at all. Through the whole of October, no one noticed that.
So, Tim, why has this got you so annoyed?
Well, my experiment has shown that probably in about 1 in 50 journeys will someone properly check the ticket. So you've got a 2% chance of actually getting caught without a valid ticket. So if that's the case, then why should I bother paying £308 a month, well over £3,500 a year, to buy a ticket when it's not really worth it? I could quite easily get on the train without a valid ticket, and when a ticket inspector actually spotted it, just buy a single ticket from Stortford to Tottenham Hale, and that would probably cost me 15 or 20 quid, and over a period of a year, I could save myself well over £3,000.
Well, while we can never condone such behaviour here at the BBC, is that what you're intending to do, Tim?
Oh, no, I'm trying to point it out. I expect to pay for the service I'm buying, but you think to yourself, well, why am I paying? There must be lots of people
who are being naughty and doing that.
Are being naughty and doing that, and Greater Anglia have almost certainly let them get away with it.
Well, Greater Anglia, we've spoken to them. They said they are installing barriers at Bishop Stortford and Tottenham Hale as part of a £1.8 million improvement. Does that make you feel any better?
Well, certainly the barriers would make it better, but The thing that also gets me is that Greater Anglia must be paying these people to check the tickets, or they're wasting their money, because these people aren't doing a very good job at the moment. So they could actually be saving themselves a lot of money by not employing these people, because it wouldn't make any difference.
Sack them all off.
Yes.
Tim, thank you very much indeed. That's Tim Griffiths, who is a very upset Greater Anglia customer. Have you had a similar experience? When I was a young lad, I used to dodge the... It was easy to not buy tickets all the time back then. Catherine, you want to say something?
Do they still do permits to travel?
Yeah, you can get permits to travel,
really?
I think.
Oh, really? Because that was the one that people, not me, of course, used to use, where they'd buy a permit to travel and then risk it.
Oh, when I was a kid, when I was 15, 16, I was always dodging the fare. It's naughty.
Very wrong.
Very wrong. Wouldn't do it now, of course. Had a similar experience. 08459 455555. It never stops being funny, for me at least. I don't know how irritating you're finding it, dear listener. Good morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC Three Counties Radio. Is it still raining? It was chucking it down earlier on this morning. Chucking it down. Lots coming up on the show this week. Loads of things have kind of just been thrown out there. Well, let me tell you some of them. If you want to comment on any of them, then please do. Hertfordshire police are hoping the jailing of a Watford man who threatened to kill his ex will encourage other victims of domestic abuse to come forward. But would you have the confidence to speak up? I know it's a long shot, but if you've been involved in this situation on either side, could you give me a call? 08459 455 555. It's Movember. We're asking this morning, moustache, moustave, or mistake? Must have or mistake? Yeah. And also, in the revelations, following the revelations that Cockney urchin done good, Russell Brand has never voted, well, Jeremy Paxton said, well, actually, I didn't vote once. Is not voting a valid form of protest, or is it a waste of our democratic rights? Should we be made to vote? Facebook.com/BBC3CR. You can send me a text, 81333, start your text 3CR, or you can give me a call, 08459 455 555. Oh, dear!
Across beds, hearts and bucks.
Oh.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.
I don't know why I find that so funny. For me, it never stops being funny. But for you, it may well have done. Facebook.com/BBC3CR. Or, of course, you can give me a call this morning. 08459 455 555 is the telephone number, if you so wish to do. Now, 31-year-old Craig Britton terrorised his ex-partner through their relationship, even attacking her when she was pregnant. Horrific story. Last August, he doused her and himself in lighter fluid and threatened to set them both alight. He's now serving 2.5 years, thanks in no small part to his ex's courage. I'm joined now on the line by DCI Julie Wheatley, Hertfordshire Police's lead on domestic violence. This sounds like a horrific case, Julie.
Good morning, Ian. I think it was exactly that. Obviously, a long period of time for our victim. She suffered awful mental, physical abuse, and then finally had the courage, you know, to come forward and report it. And we've gotten that. What we see is a really good result in court as a result of her coming forward.
And courage is the right word, isn't it? Because it must have been terrifying for this poor woman to come forward and speak.
I think that's exactly right, Ian. If I would put myself or anyone would put themselves in that position, it is a very brave thing when you are being controlled, coerced by anyone to have the courage, the guts, the determination, whatever you want to call it, to actually come forward and say, you know, I'm reaching a point, it's got to stop, and this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, to report to the police, to go through the court system, it can be a very daunting experience.
Does abuse often end up in violence, or is each case different? Because domestic abuse isn't just being hit, beaten around, is it?
No, Ian, it's not. I thought it might be helpful this morning. We work within the parameters of a national definition for domestic violence and abuse. And basically, it's any incident or any pattern of incidents of controlling, coercive or threatening behaviour, violence or abuse between those aged 16 or over who have been intimate partners or are intimate partners or family members. And that's regardless of your gender, your sexuality. But abuse can encompass many things. Psychological, physical abuse, you know, it's not just what we all think of as, you know, the black eye, the injuries. It's a whole range of abuse. It can be financial, you know, a person restricting finance so that someone can or can't do something. It can be emotional abuse. We've mentioned physical. So there's a whole, you know, there's a whole range of abuse, and it could be anything more, but we don't. We're not restrictive, is what I'm trying to say. We will listen to every case on its merit.
Now, I know this happens both ways, men and women, but if a woman comes to Hearts Police, how can you help them, and will they be guaranteed that they'll be able to speak to a female police officer?
Right, well, let me answer the first bit first. What we do in terms of victim, it is absolutely one of our main priorities for the force and for all the different criminal justice agencies. It's in our policing plan, it's in the Police and Crime Commissioner's plan. But what we do is, if any victim, as we said, has that courage to come forward and report it, they will receive what I see as a gold service. So they will be subject to a really robust, it's a national risk assessment model where we'll look at all the risk factors and then we'll come out with, you know, is it high, is it medium, is it low? So they will get a really, really good service. Someone will listen to them. We also have a number of specialist domestic violence officers across the force for those who are classed as the highest risk. So if you're a woman, if you're a man, it matters not. If you have been subjected to domestic violence, you will get that gold service where we will do everything we can, working with our partners, to protect you and other vulnerable members of your family setup.
And would a woman be guaranteed she could speak to a female?
I don't think it's a guarantee that if it is if it is specifically requested, we would accommodate that request. You'd be surprised, though, Ian, not a lot of women who have gone through years of domestic violence request a female officer. They just want someone who is professional, someone who will listen to them and then do something about it.
Am I right in thinking it doesn't matter how long after the abuse has taken place before you can help?
No, it doesn't. It helps us in terms of, you know, getting what we call corroborating evidence if it's reported as soon as someone possibly can. But it doesn't. It doesn't stop. It can have happened years ago. We will go through, we will, you know, if that person has sought medical help, we will get those medical records, and we will build up a picture, we will build up a case. It makes it easier if it's more recent and we've got, you know, if there are injuries, if there is other evidence for us to gather. But no. What I would say this morning is please report it whenever you feel you can.
DCI Julie Wheatley from Hertfordshire Police, thank you very much indeed. 08459 455 555 if you'd like to have your say on that.
Across Beds, Hearts and Bucks.
This is Ian Lee.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
We spoke to Tim Griffiths before 7 o'clock. He was the gentleman who bought a monthly pass to travel on the train and was never checked. His ticket was never checked. He quite often showed them the wrong ticket and they said, yeah, OK. Tickets, please. Yep, that'll do. The ticket was out of date. Well, your story's on this. Heidi is in London and has texted in. Ian, re-tickets. My son lost his wallet in Edinburgh containing his rail ticket home. They wanted about 300 quid for a replacement when he told them he'd lost it on the phone. So he turned up, got on the train to London without a ticket. He did get turfed off the train twice, but he still made it all the way back to London without paying a penny, but he'd already paid. I'm trying to think. I always get really nervous when the ticket inspectors come round on trains. I mean, on trains a lot recently, and I always get quite nervous. And I can never find my ticket. Got it here, so, and I start feeling guilty. It's like when there's a police car behind you. I get that kind of guilt vibe going on. I don't know. Do you get that, Catherine?
Yeah, a bit.
The kind of the guilt.
Yeah, and I feel like I know where my ticket is, but I have to double check, triple check as they're coming down the carriage.
Mm. What I don't like, they did this to me the last time I was coming back from Manchester. They woke me up. I was having a lovely doze, 2 hour, 15 minute train journey. I was having a lovely doze, and you're just getting the prod.
It's the old scam, though, isn't it? They either go to the loo or pretend to be asleep.
No, a better scam is if you go on with your twin.
Right.
Only one of you buys a ticket.
Yeah.
So you go to one of the twin A, let's call him or her.
Well, helpful if they're the same gender as you.
Yeah, let's call him. Let's start with Twin X. Twin X goes to the toilet. Mm-hmm. Twin Z, forget why. That was a long, complicated story. Twin Z is in the seat. Hang on a second.
Is Twin Z the good twin or the evil twin?
That was Twin Y. That makes him a triplet. Forget triplets. Right. So twin one goes to the toilet. Twin
That's
two,
the evil twin.
Yes. Twin two sits on the seat. Twin two's got the ticket. Shows it to the ticket person. The woman knocks on the door for twin one. Twin one comes out and says, I've seen your ticket already. Thanks very much indeed. Hang on a minute. You're twins.
What if she doesn't remember the face?
Well, then you're in a whole heap of trouble. The plan is flawed. Luckily, I don't have a twin, so I've not been out. If anyone's done that,
I think you have to make a big deal of it.
What
so that they would remember you.
Yeah.
He checks the ticket, then you pass it to your twin, and then he...
Well, there's no point in having a twin then, is there?
Yeah, because if you've got a travel card, then you've both got the same face on the...
You wouldn't, but no, but this is... forget travel cards for a minute. That's a subgenre. Maybe we'll talk about that after eight.
Can't wait.
I'm talking specifically about tickets that have got no identification.
The orange stripy.
The orange stripy ones.
Oh.
Your plan doesn't require twins. You could be different...
people.
Not genres, people, genders.
Genders.
Could be different genders for that one to work.
Are we really talking about this?
I'm just trying to think. I've got the twin thing wrong somewhere.
You haven't got a twin. That's where you're
flawed. That is one of the flaws. Thanks for that. There's a better way. I'm not condoning that behaviour, by the way. Not in any way is that being condoned. Very naughty. 08459 455 555. I tell you what, we've not had one gentleman this morning phone up, or one lady, and say, I think the moustache is sexy. Because there are some women, I know, there are some women who think the moustache is really, really sexy. They do think it's a little bit kinky. It is the Tom Selleck's, isn't it? The Magnums. 08459 455 555. Burt Reynolds, you're right, Aidan, on Facebook. Burt Reynolds doesn't look right without a moustache. He needs a moustache. Okay, let's put the call out. Can we find a woman? 08459. No, can we find a woman who thinks that moustaches are sexy? That's the challenge. Are you one of those? 08, one of those. 08459 455 555. Is there anybody out there who is brave, nay, foolish enough to admit that, yes, yeah, I find the moustache, the mooey, the tash, sexy? 08459 455 555 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call on moustaches, on voting, on trains, or on guide dogs. Back in August, we told you an incredible story about a partially sighted woman from Watford who was told she couldn't bring her guide dog into a bakery in St Albans. She was told to leave it outside as if it were a pet. Well, that was sorted out. The bakery eventually apologised and did good. Well, it's happened again to the same woman, this time in the Watford branch of Subway, the sandwich chain. They say it's against policy and has promised to investigate the incident. Well, it's not just against policy, Subway, it's against the law. Joined now by Stephen Brooks, MBE, disability consultant and coordinator of the Disability Hate Crime Network. Stephen, I know that Subway stores are franchised out, but still, it's a big brand. How can they get it so wrong?
Good morning, Ian. Well, actually, it seems as though Subway get it regularly wrong, because obviously when I'm asked to comment on these things, I make sure of my ground and I have a look and I did the usual. How would we survive without Google? But I had a look, and it does seem as though several Subway restaurants in the last year have done exactly the same thing. And I'm looking now at a case similarly in Bristol in June. Mm. Now, Subway issued their statement, which I think it looks as though they've issued to you as well.
It
we
seems
want to
be sure, yes.
Our customers, etc., etc.
That's exactly the same statement they've sent us. Isn't that incredible?
Well, exactly.
How
what
cheeky!
What they put in is that Codasil are independently owned and operated by franchisees. Now, the point is though that Subway, of course, get a profit out of this, and they're supposed to train their franchises into the law and into a common policy. It seems very much as though the person who I want to get to the bottom of is the overall training manager for Subway, because clearly, one, he's getting it totally wrong, and two, basically, as you suggested, they are breaking the law big, big time.
What do they need to do to rectify this?
Well, one, I would imagine that they need to get some emails flying today to every single branch of Subway in the country and make sure that this matter is put to bed at once. Not allowing a guide dog is... it is against the law, but never mind the law. It's about the common dignity of the person who is actually made to feel embarrassed, and yet again a disabled person is demeaned in front of other people. This is the appalling part of it, that all they're doing is sort of issuing a blank statement. Now, you know, it seems to me rather than issuing a statement, they need to issue a policy alteration to their stores and make sure they don't continue to break the law.
How does it affect the person who is, you know, kind of pointed at and in the middle of a shop?
The trouble is that being disabled, it's not just a one-off incident, it's a sort of a series of drip feeds. When you're continually harassed about being disabled, when you're continually told that you're a waste of space, it eventually gets to you. I mean, I know it's not entirely relevant, but I had an incident in Euston Underground Station not that long ago when I was travelling. There must have been a broken leaf on the Northern Line or something, and every single train was sort of late. When the whole concourse was full, an underground manager came up to me, and his name is forever emblazoned in my mind, but he came up to me and said, you should choose a better time of the day for travelling, on the basis of a disabled person.
May I ask, Stephen, may I ask how your disability affects you? So what kind of picture was being we can paint here?
I have a walking aid.
Right.
So automatically people say, how is my knee? Well, in fact, I've got a double fractured spine. I can only walk at my pace. And since then, I've had a stroke and heart condition.
Okay.
But the fact is, it was the apparent aiming at me because I was not a useful person in society. Now, that's the reason.
You should choose a different time to travel. Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
But this is the point, you see. I mean, it's the same kind of thing that this lady and the lady in Bristol had to contend with. Looking at this particular case in Bristol, Subway issued a statement after a complaint, but there was no apology in that case either. Now, this is the point. As in the Bristol one, She tried to explain, but eventually left the store in tears, being mocked by other customers. Now, that's the point in concern here, that they create an environment where any disabled person is viewed as being a waste of time. It is appalling. It really does need bottoming out. And as I say, I would love you to get hold of whoever is in charge of franchise training and get them to understand the damage that they do to disabled people.
And trust me, Stephen, we have tried to get someone to come and speak to us from Subway, and of course they will not.
No, and one wonders why, because if they're genuinely serious in trying to put this matter right, then they would be there like a dose of salt. It just seems as though, you know, we have a franchise, we will make a profit out of it, and darn the customers, it doesn't really matter. And I think, you know, this kind of attitude is the kind of thing that we have to put up with. And as disabled people, we will make sure we don't put up with it. So I'm getting in touch with all my relevant people. And, of course, one thing that I suppose could be done is for disabled people to make it absolutely clear that they won't use Subway stores. We have, as disabled people in this country, a £50 billion spend. There are 11 million of us who are disabled in the country. That's the point. If we remind people that we all have wallets and purses, it doesn't make economic sense to bar a disabled person in any form of accessibility issue, because you are going to lose that money, and therefore they will lose the money of that person's friends and also those that know. I mean, I should imagine, while some will sort of ignore it, people listening to this morning will say, oh, somewhere a bit like that, are they? We'll find somewhere else to go. I do hope so.
Stephen, I appreciate your time this morning. Stephen Brooks, coordinator of the Disability Hate Crime Network. I will read out the statement, simply because he's right. I hadn't noticed this. They don't say sorry at all. And it is the same statement, word for word, that they sent out when the same incident happened in Bristol. The Subway statement. We want to reassure our customers that working guide dogs are always allowed in Subway stores. Well, we know of two incidents where that's not been true. All Subway stores, registered trademark, it's got the little R logo in a circle there, are independently owned and operated by franchisees. We are unaware of an incident at the Watford Parade store and are investigating the case of this particular franchise. Please note that this quote must be attributed to a spokesperson from the Subway brand. No word of an apology or a sorry or anything like that. 08459 455 555.
On FM, AM, online and digital radio.
This is Ian Lee.
On BBC Three Counties Radio.
Let's have a look at the front pages of the papers. Lots of pictures of Samantha Cameron, wearing a sari. Leading lights, says the Times. Samantha Cameron yesterday at the Neasden Temple. Have you seen the Neasden Temple? It's an amazing building. Drive past it quite often. It's in northwest London, during the Diwali season, in which Hindus celebrate the triumph of God. And lost terrorist suspect was cleared the same day. Man who fled in burqa faced tagging charges. That's Mohammed Ahmed Mohammed. The Independent. Britain's secret listening post in the heart of Berlin claims that GCHQ has maintained spying operations even after the US pulled out. Is anybody surprised that Britain and America are spying on other countries? I thought that's what we did. I'm not saying it's necessarily right or wrong, but isn't that what we did? And there's a picture of Rebecca Brooks talking about her court case there. The Guardian, Sam Cam, in a sari. Oh, the Daleks were darlings. Tom Baker on Doctor Who. We'll have a little look at that later on. Off air, of course. Court told of Brooks' bid to hide hacking evidence. And Blunkett calls for spy agency safeguards. Let's have a look. The Daily Telegraph. Cameron, we can win the case for staying in Europe. It's all a little dry this morning, the news, if I'm completely honest. Why hire foreigners? They just work harder. Front page of the Telegraph. Employers hire foreigners because they are better qualified and work harder, a study suggests today. Oh! The research from the National Institute for Economic and Social Research found that recruiting skilled foreigners allows companies to become more efficient and expand their businesses. Oh! Well done then. Good for them. Sounds like a cracking idea. Steve's in Bletchley. Morning, Steve.
Hello, morning.
Steve, what can I do for you?
About the, the bloke that threatened to set fire to himself and his ex-missus.
Yes.
I mean, surely it must be pretty demoralising for the police to arrest him and then he gets sentenced after 2.5 years. He should be strung up or set alight himself. It's disgusting. What a sentence.
2.5 years, on the face of it, would seem to be a paltry amount, wouldn't it? Yes.
Yes, of course it is.
I know your tongue is in your cheek when you're saying we should set fire to him ourselves.
Well, why not? He deserves it. He's tortured that woman for how many months or years anyway, yeah. Mentally and everything else, and then you go and do that. Get rid of him.
Yeah, but Steve, we live, luckily, thank God for us, we live in a civilised society where setting fire to criminals is not one of the options that a judge has.
I think you might put the crime rate down if you set fire to some of the criminals as well. Would you not think it's a deterrent?
Well, then
we live in too much of a puffy society.
Steady, Steve, steady with your language. It's a category C, but just watch it. Now, the thing is, you have to have differentiations, don't you? So who would you set a light to, Steve?
Listen, we was on about the sentencing. Let's not miss the point. I'm on about this man
who would you set a light to?
The police must be demoralised.
A shoplifter?
Well, chop his fingers off.
Okay, so you chop a shoplifter's fingers off.
Yeah.
Would you set fire to a car thief?
I don't know. No, let me think about that. I'll lock him in there and throw some gas cylinders in there and let him suffer for a couple of hours and then let him out.
Wow.
And teach him a lesson. You send him to prison, it's like an holiday camp. You know, when we're paying for it, it's our money. We should throw the justice out. The justice system is a failure. And the police must get naffed off because they're just doing the work. They're trying to do the job. And then when the criminals get to court, they give them pittance. Well, what's the point? And it's our taxpayers that's running the police force. And another waste of load of money. Anyway, on that note, I'm off. All right.
Well, that's Stephen Bletchley with some rather extreme views. Part of me would like to think his tongue was in his cheek, but the majority of me knows it wasn't. He genuinely believes that. Listen, the sentence that gentleman was handed, 2.5 years, it was paltry, you're right. But thank God we live in a country where we don't chop shoplifters' fingers off and lock car thieves in a car for a couple of hours and chuck some gas canisters in there. And set fire to violent people. No, 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 Steve, please. Please. 08-459-455-555.
Call 08-459-455-555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC Three Counties Radio. We've got through lots this morning and more to come. We're talking about domestic violence. We're talking about guide dogs, trains. What else have we got? We've loads of things to talk about. If you want to give us a call on that or anything else, moustaches 08459 455555 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Now, I'm trying to find... I can't find the script for this bit, so we'll just go... We'll just freestyle to Justin. Are we freestyling?
Hello, Ian.
Good morning, boss.
Good morning. You all right, boss?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much, bruv. Now, what can we do for you?
Well, you got me earlier on talking about the moustache.
That was it. I knew there was a reason.
William Hansen and his outrageous views on men, saying that if you have a tash this month, don't bother because you won't be taken seriously at work.
This is an important month for lots of people. Mm. It's Movember, where men are encouraged to grow moustaches to raise money for testicular cancer and various things like that. William Hansen, who's been on this show before, I believe he's a close friend of Jonathan Vernon Smith. He is an etiquette expert.
Yeah.
He said you wouldn't be taken seriously. Growing a novelty moustache is really not advisable, especially if you have a serious job.
Oh,
I'm yet to see a man who looks better for growing the moustache, and I think a lot of men enjoy the idea as it means they can save time shaving in the morning, is what he had to say. Now, you disagree with him strongly, don't you?
Yeah, and you do as well, surely. Come on. Yes, come on.
I'm going to sit on the fence on this one. I'm going to be impartial because I would like you to speak to Mr. Hansen later on in the show.
Yeah, where is Hansen?
He's coming on later on. Don't worry.
I'm looking forward to it.
You will be talking to him. But you've been speaking to members of the Great British, haven't you?
Yes, I've been in the very posh Harpenden this morning talking about the moustache. And here's what people had to say.
Emma, I want you to be honest with me here. A man with a moustache, would that do it for you?
No.
Can you tell me why?
I don't know. It just doesn't do anything for me.
Really?
Yeah,
so, I mean, this month you're going to see quite a few of them.
Yeah.
So is that going to put you off walking the streets?
It won't put me off. I just don't... doesn't do anything for me.
Peter, a tash. A moustache or a moustache?
Say it again.
Having a tash. Is that a moustache or a moustache?
First one.
What, a moustache?
Yeah. No. What was the other one?
A moustache.
Well, for me, moustache. Because it don't suit me.
So we're in Harpenden, and I found a lady who I think likes a tash. Madam, men who have got a moustache, Do you find them attractive? Do you like them?
I do. Thank you. Yeah. I do like it. Yeah. Some of them I like it very much. Yeah.
Very sexy, yeah?
Yes. Thank you.
Well, I've been looking all morning. I found somebody with a moustache. This is Terry. Terry, how long have you had a tash for?
2 months.
How does it feel to have one?
Warm.
So you wouldn't change?
No, no.
Because William Hanson, the etiquette expert, is saying that people like you, who have a moustache, when you go into work, you're not taken seriously. In your experience, what's happened since you've had this tash?
Opposite, really. People actually come out and speak to me more.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. Where I had a younger-looking face, people didn't really take me that seriously. Now I look older, people take me more seriously.
See, what I like about this, you've got brown hair, but that's a ginger tash.
Yes, my hair. My family actually had ginger hair. This has come out ginger. Oh. But when I cut this down, this will come out ginger and then go darker.
It's an interesting conversation. And just lastly, is that your partner behind us?
That is, yes.
She's not listening.
No.
How does she like it?
She loves it. She loves it. I shaved it off once and she wanted me to grow it back.
She's now obsessed.
Yes.
Terry, we like you. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
That's right. Thank you.
So you agree with William Hanson's views. Can you tell us why?
I just think moustaches are out of date.
So if you went into work today, you think you wouldn't be taken seriously?
Probably not.
Charity's charity at the end of the day.
Yeah.
If it's for a good cause, I'd do anything for a good cause.
And just lastly, when was the last time you saw a really good tash that really set you back and you thought, wow, look at that bad boy?
Funny enough, in the paper, and that Indian guy who had about a 12-foot-long tash. That's about it. That's the one that made me giggle.
I think, Justin, how are you saying the word?
Moustache.
I think that's a Greek dish. You mean moustache?
Yeah, but I prefer to call it a moustache. It sounds sexier. Hi, I've got a moustache.
Now, you can't grow one, can you? You haven't got the genetics.
Well, do you know what? Funny you should say that, because I had some very good feedback on the streets this morning. People said to me that, you know, potentially I could actually grow a very good moustache. So take that back.
Have you ever tried? Have you ever grown a beard?
I grew a beard about 2 years ago. Yep. Funny enough, you grew a beard last year as well, around Christmas time, didn't
you? I did, I did.
And I quite liked it. When I grew a beard, people were saying to me, yeah, it looks good, but you know what? It just got a bit itchy. It's got a bit itchy towards the end, you know?
Justin, listen, we're going to get William Hanson on the show a little bit later on.
Please.
I'd love you to speak to him. Have you got some spare time now?
Yes.
We'd also kind of mention voting. I know it's a little bit late, what with Russell Brand coming out last week saying he doesn't vote.
Mm.
But Jeremy Paxman today has said that he didn't vote once as well. And I do have to be honest, I think that not voting is a valid form of protest.
But why?
Well, because you are making your statement that you don't think, or whatever your statement is, but possibly that you don't think those standing represent you.
I just think in this country we have, you know, that unique right to vote. So go and use it.
It's not unique.
We have a right to vote in this country. Now, we should be using that right to vote. What people tend to do is not vote, and then they'll start moaning about the country. Well, if you didn't go out and vote in the first place, why are you moaning about it?
With the greatest respect, bruv, that is balls.
Why is that balls?
I did vote in the last. Let's say I chose not to vote.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a right to say what I feel about the country and how I want it to be run.
But you had that right to go and vote.
I paid taxes.
Yeah, but you had a right to go and vote for people to run this country, who you think would run this country, you know, better than other people, but you didn't take that right. So if you didn't take that right to vote, have you really got a right to moan?
Probably yes, because I am paying taxes. I am contributing financially and indeed I'd like to think artistically to this wonderful country of ours.
Make it law and then we will never have this conversation again.
They do it in Australia. It's law in Australia,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly. You know, I think in this country, every single year we have the conversation about the voting numbers. Let's just make it law. You know, once and for all in this country, every single person, you have to go out and vote. It's as simple as that. We all know where we stand then.
Can you go and speak to people on the street for us, Just?
Yeah, of course, no problem.
Cheers, my dear. Speak to you later on. 08459 455555. Colin's in Luton. Morning, Colin.
Good morning.
What can I do for you, sir?
Two things.
Yes.
Firstly, just what you were talking about voting.
Yes.
I was in the unfortunate situation where, in the last general election, I was working away from home, and because of the contract, I wasn't able to get home to vote.
Yes.
But also, I didn't know when the contract was going to finish. It could have been, I could have had 24 hours notice. And so I couldn't get a postal vote or anything like that.
Okay.
So it wasn't that I didn't want to vote, it was simply that I couldn't.
And do you feel that you missed out by not voting?
Yes, of course.
Let's be honest, your one vote wouldn't have made any difference, would it?
It might have done, no. I never know.
You, no, it wouldn't. Never. I can't think of any examples where they've counted up the votes and one vote would have made a difference. It's normally a few thousand gap, isn't it, between first and second?
Well, yes and no.
Yes.
Certainly in local elections it can be down to one vote.
But not voting surely no. is a valid form of protest. You're making your statement, which may be, I don't think that any of these people represent me, and I don't think the system is fair, so I'm going to opt out of it.
Ah, that's another question. I mean, I would love to be able to put none of these.
That's a good option, yeah, none of the above.
So going on to Subway.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's not talk about them too. I don't want to sort of go about them specifically because they're not here to defend themselves. Let's talk about places in general that refuse guide dogs.
Have they been taken to court? If it's if it's in the law, then they should be taken to court and fined.
Well, that would involve someone bringing a case against one of these establishments. I don't know if that's happened. It's certainly something to look into. Colin, thank you very much indeed. 08459 455 555 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Yet to find one person who's called in. I know Justin spoke to someone, but one person to call in and say, whoa, Ian, the moustache. And that is how you pronounce it, by the way. Ew, don't get rid of it. It is dead sexy. It is. It's like handlebars. 08459 455 555. Is that you? You're a fan of the moustache. Drake says, the Merv Hughes is the only acceptable moustache. Who's Merv Hughes? I don't know who that is. Have you noticed how a little square tash under the nose is not vogue anymore? The Hitler moustache. Yeah, the Hitler moustache, which is disappointing because I prefer to think of it as the Oliver Hardy moustache. But you can't do it now. Steve says, there are more germs on the average tash than on your toilet seat. Well, that's something to know. On the subject of voting, Gary's in Hemel. Morning, Gary.
Hi, Gary. Morning.
Gary, turn your radio off, and what have you got to say?
I'll just turn my radio off. I can't. I'm sorry, I'm on my hands free here.
Oh, okay, well, go on, try and make your point.
Well, basically, I agree with everything you were saying to Justin. You took the words right out of my mouth just before I rang your number. As long as I'm paying my taxes, I think I've got the right to say whatever I want about the government, but I won't vote because I think they're bad as each other. If they're willing to rip off the public by these tax expenditures, who's going to want to vote for someone who's going to do that to you? So, that's basically what I'm putting my point of view with.
I do think you're right, Gary, that by contributing taxes, paying your taxes and buying things and paying VAT, you should have a say in the country.
That's right. Why not?
Gary, thank you very much indeed. There'll be people that disagree with that. Justin Dealey is one of them. 08459 455 555 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Don't forget, of course, you can email me at any time. Lots of emails coming in. Thank you. Ian, IAIN, dot Lee, LEE, at bbc.co.uk. Ian.Lee at bbc.co.uk. You can email me about stuff you've heard on the show. And I keep saying this as well, and we've had some cracking stories from you. If you've got something that you think should be on the show, something huge or something tiny, send me an email and we'll have a little look at it. And we'll see if we can fit it in somewhere.
25,600 minutes.
Fantastic! Is it a valid argument to say, you know what, I'm not going to vote? That's my statement. It's my protest. Justin Dealey disagrees with that very strongly. I've sent him out to get the opinions of people on the street. But what do you think? Paxman has come out and said he didn't vote once. 08459 455 555. Is it ever acceptable not to vote? And this morning I am desperate for a woman to call me up. There is more to this sentence. And to tell me that she finds moustaches sexy. Because there are some women that do. Catherine, you're a woman. Do you find them erotic at all?
No, it'd be like kissing a dad.
You do kiss a dad, though, don't you?
Yeah, not someone who's my friend's dad. In the 80s, all dads had moustaches, didn't they?
Yeah, and they're good because you can kind of... You get your pointy finger and your thumb and you can just brush down like that.
You can think quite visibly. But you also get stuff trapped in the... Oh, no, I just couldn't.
Mice. Fleas, spiders, you're right. 08459 455 555. Have you ever bought a train ticket and never had it checked? Well, a man who uses Greater Anglia through Hertfordshire is so annoyed his ticket isn't being properly checked, he's written an open letter to the company's managing director. Tim Griffith spoke to me earlier on. He uses the service from Bishop Stortford to Tottenham Hale. Well, Edward Butler Ellis is a former Milton Keynes councillor and uses the trains a lot for work. Morning, Edward. Do you think that Tim has a point?
Absolutely, yes, he does have a point. I travel for work all over the country, including Greater Anglia. And you find that there's a lot of unmanned railway stations and not very many staff on the trains checking the tickets. I travelled up to Northampton this weekend, used one train to get there and two trains to get back, and one conductor came through to check the tickets, but it didn't even pay attention to what was actually contained on the ticket, because... Not sure if you use them at the train yourself at the weekend, but you can upgrade for not very much money to first class. And the check came through, looked at my ticket, was, you know, sort of said, yep, that's fine. And I said, well, actually, I need to upgrade my ticket because I need to, you know, I've got a standard class fare here. So he sat there for 5 minutes trying to work out its machine and said, oh, don't worry about it. Talk to the conductor on the next train. So London Midlands ended up losing money on that trip.
What? I'm confused slightly, Edward. Why do we need people to check tickets? The onus is on us to buy the ticket, isn't it?
It is, but a lot of people that would prefer to travel for free or not pay for the class of travel that they'd they'd like to. You know, you get a lot of people that will try and push their way onto the trains and people should get the tickets before they get on the trains. But the number of services that you get on and you can see people, especially in and around London where you've got no manned gate, that people will take advantage of the free travel that's available.
What do train companies need to do? Is it better training? Is it more staff?
Well, I think that they need to improve improve some of the staff that they've got working on the service. I mean, we can't just take a broad brush approach. They've got some very hard-working members of staff that probably have to deal with some very difficult customers all the time. But I think that, you know, we've all got to look at it because it affects the ticket price of everybody that uses it. If you've got rail companies that are losing revenue through firstly people not buying their tickets and secondly inspectors not going along and making sure that people have purchased the right ticket, then come January all the rail companies want to stick an extra 4, 5, 6% on the price of rail tickets, and actually we should all be interested in it.
But they're not in realistic terms, the train companies aren't going to reduce the price of tickets ever, even if everybody who avoided paying their fare started paying, they'd still go up.
Oh, they probably would, yeah. But you'd like to think that they go up by a lower percentage than they would otherwise. So, and you know, it's not right that you get a lot of us that will actually buy our ticket for whatever class of class of coach we're travelling in, and there's a significant number of people that can evade ticket inspectors and avoid paying altogether.
Edward, I appreciate your time this morning. Edward Butler Ellis, former Milton Keynes councillor. A significant number of people avoiding paying for tickets. Does that happen? I did it when I was 15, 16. I haven't done it since. If I'm getting a train, I'd book the ticket as early as possible. Have you done that? Have you recently avoided buying a ticket, evaded your fare? 08459 455 555. I'm not condoning it, not encouraging it at all. I'm just curious as to why you do it and how easy it is. I know it's a tough one. Can you phone up if you've broken the law? But begin to talk to you. 08459 455 555. On the subject of the moustache, it's Jane, who is in Aylesbury. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Ian.
Do you love it?
I love them.
Why?
The person who wears it looks more distinguished and looks older.
Did you ever see...
As long as I haven't got a bald head with a moustache.
Oh, that's the worst combination. Yeah. Did you ever see Ian Beale in EastEnders when he had a moustache?
Yes, I did.
Did you find that sexy?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Surely it's like kissing a vole or something, isn't it? It can't be pleasant.
You just get used to it.
This is one of the many reasons I could never be gay, because I couldn't kiss a stubbly face. I just couldn't do it. Those bristles and those, I'd come out in a rash.
Not gay.
Well, no, I mean, listen, I've you know, in the back of my mind, you'll think, well, but the stubbly face and a moustache and a beard. Oh no, I couldn't. Well,
when it's first coming through, it's a nightmare. But yeah. Once it's there. It's fine.
It's fine, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you think all men look better, Jane, without the moustache? With the moustache, sorry.
As long as they haven't got a bald head with a moustache, I think that is a real turn-off.
You've got a real thing against bald heads, haven't you?
I'm sorry.
Oh, dear.
It just doesn't look right.
Okay. Well, Jane, stay on the line, because we're going to play a little game here, okay?
Yeah.
The next caller, I want you to try and tell whether you think Andy has a moustache or doesn't have a moustache. Andy, can you just say a few words to Jane?
Good morning. How are you?
Hello, Andy. I'm fine, thank you.
You're a moustache lover, then.
So, Jane, what do you think? Does Andy, from what you've heard there, does he have a moustache or does he have no moustache?
I think he has one.
What makes you say that?
I don't know. I
noticed when you started speaking, both of you, there was a little electricity in the air. Little tension. Well, let's ask him. Why don't you ask him, Jane?
Andy, do you have a moustache?
I do.
I see. I told you.
Yeah. Jane finds you sexy already, Andy. You're not bald, are you?
No, I'm not.
Beautiful.
I'm a full head of hair.
Oh, we're made for each other, then.
Oh, man. Jane, thank you very much for being a good sport. Andy, why do you have a moustache?
Growing it for charity.
You're growing it for Movember?
Yeah, I used to have a moustache, and I stopped growing it years ago, but decided to grow it back this year on the basis that it's a team effort. We're all growing moustaches.
Do you come from a military or a police background?
I do, yes.
Oh! Boom shakalaka! I can tell you why, because the moustache kind of gave it away slightly, and also you're speaking in the tones of someone who has served his country in one form or another. It's not an insult, it's just an interesting thing. And have you found in your life, Andy, that people, women, find it, well, erotic?
No, most dislike it, like them. They describe them as caterpillars.
The caterpillar, the slug. And finally, Adam, William Hansen, etiquette expert, who we're hoping to speak to before the end of the show, says, listen, don't grow a moustache for Movember. If you've got a sensible job, you won't be treated with respect. What's your take on that?
No, doesn't apply at all. I achieved major, and having a moustache never stopped me from finding my way through the ranks.
Andy, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much. Isn't it funny? You can just tell. The military or police, he was military, just by the way they speak. Isn't it funny? Andy, thank you very much. And thank you to... I think if you want to swap phone numbers, I think we can do that. 08459 455 555, BBC Three Counties. Thank you, Bowery. Suddenly it's 8 o'clock. I'm always amazed when we get to 8 o'clock. The first 2 hours just fly by. Well, they do for me. Maybe a hideous drudge for you, in which case I can only apologise. Lots to talk about this morning, and always keen to get your views. Lots of good phone calls. Some fiery thoughts. Fiery thoughts. Could be a name for my autobiography. Hertfordshire police are hoping the jailing of a Watford man who threatened to kill his ex will encourage other victims to come forward. But would you have the confidence to speak up? It's Movember. We're asking moustache, moustave, or mistake, you see? We found one woman who finds the moustache very sexy thing. Can we find the opposite? A woman who finds it disgusting, and every year when her husband grows one, she's like, oh dear, no. Justin Daly will be arguing with William Hansen live on the show. Following last week's revelations that Russell Brand doesn't vote, Jeremy Paxman said he's missed the odd vote. Well, is not voting an appropriate form of protest? Or should we make it law that you have to vote? Facebook.com/BBC3CR. 81333. Start your text 3CR or give me a call. 08459 455 555.
Across Beds, hearts and bucks.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.
On the subject of voting, oh, try and put your names on the text, please. No, don't try. Put your names on the text, please. Anonymous says, absolutely, it's okay not to vote. Democracy is about freedom of choice. Making it law to vote would be ridiculous. Will it be law to have a certain religion next? Do we have to be part of a party, team, organisation? Can we not have our own views anymore? I do think, and this is slightly, I had a row with my wife about this the other day, in my head, she said the opposite, and I could have had a row, I just couldn't be bothered. I do, but in my head I had a massive row. I do think that, and I did vote last time, I do enjoy voting, but I do think not voting is a valid form of protest. There have been times when I have not voted because none of them appealed to me, thought they were all the same, it wouldn't have made a difference where I was. That's okay, isn't it? I find it surprising that anybody could be angry or upset about that. That's my right. And yet I am still allowed a say in the country because I pay tax. I pay income tax, I pay VAT. I contribute to this country. So I'm allowed to have my say and be upset and frustrated with things and with governments and with councils, aren't I? Maybe you completely disagree. 08459 455 555 is the phone number on that. On the subject of, we spoke to a gentleman called Tim, who's been travelling on a certain branch of the train line. He's never had his tickets checked, or when they do check, they don't really have a look. Helen says, Ian, I commuted from Milton Keynes to London in the 80s and 90s. A man in his 20s had been using the same service with the top of a cereal packet instead of a ticket. He got away with it for some months until he boastfully displayed his tickets to us, amongst whom were managers with British Rail. Ah, dear. Ah, dear. And Les says, I'm a bus driver, and since we've been one-man operated, no more conductor, it's very difficult to check every ticket and pass as passengers board the bus due to very tight timetables. Hence, some slip the net. 08459 455 555. I missed off three papers. Some may say the three most important papers. Some may say the three most important comics earlier on. The Daily Mail, it's Sari Sam Cam. I'm Sari. A £10,000 bill to teach asylum seeker to fly. Taxpayers face a bill of thousands of pounds to... so a failed asylum seeker can train to be a pilot. Jonas Admasu Kebedi will be given flying lessons, costing £10,000, even though the government says he must leave the UK next year. The 21-year-old from Ethiopia will also get up to £10,000 in living expenses. A council is being forced to pay up after a court ruled it must meet Mr. Kibedi's education costs after leaving school. The Daily Express, Susanna Reid is on the front page. I've lost half a stone thanks to Strictly, when really we know it's just an excuse for the Daily Express to put a picture of Susanna Reid and up in the top, Madeleine McCann, both on the same page. 75,000 say no more EU migrants. Daily Express readers sign our petition to stop flood of Bulgarians and Romanians. But Daily Express, I don't want to say... point this out, but there is a flaw. It's 75,000 Daily Express readers, so they are by their very nature going to say no to more EU migrants. And the Sun, burqa bunker in White Widow gang. Brit terror fugitive, a terror suspect who fled in a burqa while under surveillance, has links to the White Widow Samantha Luthwaite's Kenya massacre gang. And there's a picture of that Flanagan lady in a bra. 08459 455 555. Carol's in St Albans on the subject of voting. Good morning, Carol.
Morning, Ian.
What would you like to say?
It's all very well making everybody vote, but I voted once and said if people can't be bothered to come and talk to me about their policies, I can't be bothered to vote for them. And to my mind, they're all the same. And left it at that.
What, did you write that on your paper?
I wrote that on my paper. Would you believe I got a phone call?
Oh.
Exactly.
Saying what? And from whom?
From some party or another, asking me what on earth I meant. And I've told them precisely that. If they are not prepared to come and talk to me on my doorstep, I am not prepared to go out and vote for any particular party. And to my mind, they're all the same and all a lot of... Never mind.
Hang on a second. How did they know it was you?
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh.
And I was livid about that, but they wouldn't tell me. Because I do not give in my numbers. I refuse to give my number.
The vote's supposed to be anonymous, isn't
it? Exactly.
And the ballot paper doesn't have any identification on it.
No, but they put it on a... If you watch them, they put a number on a sheet when they tick your name off.
And they're jotting down the number of your ballot paper?
Yes.
Oh, how naughty.
Exactly.
Are you all right? You sound like you're crying.
No, I thought you were crying.
Well, that's very naughty. Well, Carol, listen, thank you very much indeed. And they're not supposed to know who votes for what. And if you write a message on there... Well, listen, the good aspect of that is that somebody has read the message that you'd written down on there. The bad aspect is they've then traced it back to poor Carol in St Albans. That's very naughty, isn't it? What do you think? Is it valid... A valid statement, protest, to not vote. I genuinely believe it is. I think it is your right in a democratic country to not vote. In Australia, you have to vote. And if you don't, I think you get fined $60, which is about 30 quid. Well, that seems a little bit too much. I think they have about 96, 94% the turnout for elections over there. Well... I think making people vote, I don't think that's the right way to go. I think that's a little bit fascist in its nature, isn't it? You will go out and vote. It's our right not to. And if the politicians, if the governments, if the parties are not making it attractive enough, are not appealing to people, are not able to get people out to vote, well, then that's their problem. Isn't it? Am I being a little bit simplistic here? I'm not sounding like Russell Brand, am I? I hope not. 08 459 455 555 is the telephone number if you want to give me a call. Let's go to... it's Justin Daly. Good morning, Justin.
Morning, boss.
Now, this is something we disagree on, don't we?
I'm surprised at you, actually. Very, very surprised.
Well, you feel very strongly that people should have to vote.
I just think, you know, it's a right in this country, and I think we should be going down the road of Australia, where if people don't vote... They should be fine. It's as simple as that.
The thing is, you've just argued yourself out of existence.
Go on,
Mike. You said it's a right to vote. Mm. Exactly. It's a right. It's not a law. Therefore, if it's a right, I have the opposite right to not vote if I don't want to.
Every single person in this country has got an opinion about the way this country is run. That's a fact. So, why are people not going out and voting? It's all very well having a go at how this country is being run, but go out, make the effort, and have your say. Make that vote.
Well, you've spoken to people this morning, Justin. You've done it in double quick time, which I appreciate. What did they have to say?
Yeah, I've been out in Luton this morning in the last, 20 minutes or so. Here's what people have had to say.
Sir, are you somebody who uses your right to vote?
Yes, I use my vote.
What's your thoughts on those that don't?
They should, but it's up to them.
Should it be made law in this country?
No. No, because there's no... If there was a way to register a protest vote, none of the above, then, yeah, you can make it law. Until you've got that, that's people who don't want to vote in any of the parties. Mm. The only way they can show their dissatisfaction is either staying away or supporting the ballot paper.
One final question. I mean, does it disappoint you, though, that so many people don't go out and vote?
Yes, but that shows you the state of the parties and there's not much choice between them.
State of the parties or the state of people's mindset in this country?
I think until probably about 18 months ago, there was not much difference between the big three. So it's very difficult to choose between them anyway.
Pam, when it comes to voting, do you bother?
Yes, I do. Every time.
Every time you use that right to vote?
Yes, I do.
What's your thoughts on those people that never bother?
Well, I just think they're the first to complain when they don't like what's happening, but they've got no right to complain if they haven't bothered to vote.
Should it be made law, do you think, or is that a bit too drastic?
No, that's too strong. I mean, we are supposedly in a democracy, so people have got a right not to.
And that's the thing. That's where your argument falls flat on its backside. That's where Australia comes crumbling to its knees. We are a democracy. We have a right to vote or a right not to vote.
Well, don't moan then. Like that woman says, you know, if you don't go and make the vote, don't moan about the country.
No, incorrect. I pay a significant amount of income tax. I probably own more shares in this company that is Great Britain PLC than you do. So I'm a shareholder in this country.
Do you not sit there and feel guilty, you know, when it comes to voting day, when you're sitting at home probably listening to the monkeys and you haven't bothered to go out and vote? You don't feel guilty at all?
I did vote in the last election. I voted in the last few elections. This has been my choice in the past. And it may possibly be my choice again in the future if I feel so inclined.
Yes.
But do I feel guilty? No, not in the slightest.
I mean, to be fair, though, you know, you sent me out, what, 20 minutes ago. We turned that round quite quickly. But nobody I've spoken to this morning didn't go out and didn't vote. You know, those two people that I've spoken to, yep. they do it every single time. And they like to do it. You know, it's their right and they are expressing that right.
With the greatest of respect, though, they sounded both over their 40s.
And?
Well, now, I just imagine, and I'm not criticising you at all, I would imagine, I have no empirical evidence to back this up, that 35 is the line. Everyone over, the majority of people over 35 will vote. Mm-hmm. A significant number of people under 35 will not vote.
Okay, how about this then? Okay. Yep. For what? 8:45, let me find you two or three people under the age of 35 and let's get yep. their views as well. How does that sound?
That'd be great, Justin.
Okay,
thank
let's
you
do
much.
It.
Cheers, Midis. There we go. 8:15, if you're under 35, can you give us a call? 08-459-455-555. Morning, Jonathan Vernon-Smith.
Boyakasha.
You've had a little trimmage on the old headage?
Well, I had this yesterday. You didn't notice? I had it done on Saturday.
No, I didn't notice.
Really? It's nice, isn't it?
It is very, very nice. You've got a little bit of length on top and just shorter at the side, but not clipped too much.
No, I asked Ali, my barber.
Yes.
He's genuinely
really?
Called Ali Barber.
Isn't that wonderful?
I said, now, Ali, I want something a little different today. Not quite so short.
Yep.
Because you know last time...
Oh, dear.
There was practically nothing left. And the comments, well, I was tired of them. So I said, this time, let's go for something a little more fashionable.
Yep.
A little longer around the sides.
Shaggy.
Longer on top.
Yep.
Let me style it more with my surf hair mousse.
Yes, it looks like it's gone into a little peak. In the middle.
Thanks.
You're getting lots of comps, lots of feedback.
Oh, masses.
When you go to the hairdressers, what do you do when you sit in the chair? I always find that very awkward. I get a headache because I get so tense.
I talk about cars.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Can you talk about cars?
Yes.
You can do car talk.
I can do car
wow.
talk. Yes, Ali likes to talk about cars.
Yeah.
He talks about cars all the time when we're there. And I encourage it actively.
Yeah.
When I sit down there, I say, how's the car, Ali?
Oh, you're straight in there.
Yeah.
Vanessa and I don't have very much in common.
Don't you?
No. I mean, we talk about kids.
I'd never let a woman cut my hair.
Sorry?
I had a female hairdresser once, and yeah. she made such a pig's ear of it.
Yes.
No way.
Really?
No.
Would you let a woman fly an aeroplane?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good, actually.
They can fly aeroplanes, they just can't touch your head.
Not my hair.
Wow. How strange. You don't whistle or sing or anything when you're...
What, in the barber?
Yeah.
No, what do you mean whistle or sing?
Something like this. Doing harmonies.
That was me yesterday, wasn't it? You'd be recording me again.
Look at you whistling the harmonies. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, you can take away the instrument, but you'll never take away the musician.
Okay. Thank you for that. Those words of wisdom. Is that what you want on your gravestone? Very wise.
Possibly.
It's one of a number of options. What's on your show this morning?
Coming up on the big phone in this morning, have you heard this story about children being sent to school at 2?
I have heard this, yes.
Education expert Baroness Sally Morgan has said that more children should be sent to educational nurseries when they turn 2 years old. The Ofsted chairman argues that too many poorer children are way behind other pupils when they get to primary school, as their parents have failed to teach them very much at home. This leaves children unable to socialise, read or communicate properly. However, the Save Childhood movement argue that formal education shouldn't begin until children reach the age of 7, and that 2-year-olds...
7?
Should, yeah.
Okay.
The 2-year-olds should just be allowed to play at home. Or whether you're a nursery worker, a teacher, a parent or a grandparent, from 9 this morning, I want you to pick up that phone and let me know your thoughts this morning and your experiences. Do you think children should be sent to school at 2 years old? Good idea or a terrible idea? 08459-455-555.
I'm trying to remember what age we sent our eldest to nursery. It would have been 2.5. Would it have been as late as 3? It was an educational nursery. So they learn, but they learn through play. It's not they're sitting down learning their times tables. They learn through play. They learn, you know, the letters through play and games and things like that. So who says that children should start school at 7?
The Save Childhood movement.
Oh, for goodness sakes. What a load of old tosh.
What's wrong with that?
That's ridiculous. 7's much too late.
So children shouldn't be out, you know, building camps and things like that.
They can do all of these things. They can do all of these things.
As well as being educated.
Of course they can. Starting at seven is ridiculous. Oh, no, no, no. They should be able to read and write and to do maths by the age of seven. Well, I'm angry now.
Look at you. You're getting all worked up.
Furious.
Well, call me from nine. Put on one of your funny voices.
Last time I did that, I got in terrible trouble, so not again. Thank you, Jonathan.
Call 08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
I just made my thoughts on starting education at seven to Jonathan known in very coarse language. I used indoor language there. On the subject of voting, it's Big G in MK. Big G.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
I couldn't believe that you just brushed over that earlier caller, lady that put a message on her voting slip.
This was Carol, put a message on a voting slip. She claims she got a phone call from a political party shortly after.
Yeah, I thought that the whole idea behind the voting and the little boxes you go to put your cross in the party that you want to vote, was so that it was anonymous. And I can't believe that they can actually tell who has voted for which party. We might as well all wear the colours of the party we're going to vote for as we go in.
And just be counted. Well, you're right. I think this requires some investigation. I'm trying to remember, but when you vote and they give you your slip, they do write down a number, don't they? And are they taking the number off of the slip?
Yes, they do, before they give it to you, because one of them's writing it down, the other one's handing it out, and they talk to each other before you actually get the slip. Now, I thought that was just so they could log how many people were actually attending to vote, rather than having to count the ballot slips. Yeah. They just logging as they go, you know? But it turns out that it's so that they know who it is that's actually voting. I know you've got to tell them who you are so that you can only vote once, and they tick you off a list. I understand that. But to then allocate a particular ballot paper to that person so that they can look down the line and see who you voted for, I was under the impression that that would be illegal, let alone wrong.
Big G, I'm going to let you go just because the line is... it sounds like you've driven into a pond or something. I wanted to ask you a few more questions, but never mind. Thank you very much indeed. We need to do some investigation into this, I think. Is that possible? Is that actually what happens? I always thought when you went in and said, "Oh, yeah, my name's Ian Lee, I'm from 62 the High Street." Oh, I've just given out my address on the radio. Nuts. Never mind. No one will write to me. I thought they just ticked you off. But is it true that they're writing down the number of the ballot paper? Is that true? In which case, it's not anonymous, is it? 08459 455 555. Ian's in Ware. Good morning, Ian.
Hello, Ian. I think it's sort of been misconstrued, because when you go in, you give your ballot card, and they tick the number on the ballot card to say that you've attended. Now, those that don't attend will be contacted maybe by any party member, no matter of what party they belong to, as to say, well, why haven't you turned up, you know? Yeah. Is it because you're not well, or you haven't got transport? And they'll give transport. The ballot is secret. You go into a booth and it's folded down. The people that sit there, yes, there are two people. One takes a number, one passes it across. And those absentees, it's in the interest of all parties to sort of like...
get them out.
But then, Ian,
if we believe Carol's story, she did vote. She wrote a comment on the ballot paper, and as she tells it, she was contacted a week or so after.
Well, she probably defiled the ballot card and didn't actually put her cross in.
But then, how would they know it was her if it's not anonymous?
Well, I don't know, but if she says that, but she's obviously defaced it, and which probably is not the right thing to do, but she's saying a week later.
Well, she's saying that she wrote I'm not going to vote for any of you because I don't believe in any of your politics. And then she's saying, yeah, a few days later, a week later, someone from a political party phoned her up and said, you know, what's your beef?
Well,
and that if that did happen, we only have a word for it. We need to research this a bit more. If that did happen,
yeah, because I mean, we all know the system. You know, as you walk in, and it is a secret ballot, and I think our ballot is probably the most secure in the world. We have to invigilate in some of these lesser third world countries, you know, to see that things are done true and proper.
Ian, I'm just going to move on, just because I want to squeeze Tracy in. Thank you for your call. Tracy's in traffic. Yes, Tracy?
Hi, yeah, I mean, the further to point, your gentleman's just right. The lady that actually raised this did submit a ballot paper and was still identified.
Yeah, I'm trying to work out, has Carol got this slightly wrong? Has this story, you know, it been exaggerated in her mind? Or is it possible for them to trace who wrote what on a ballot paper?
I believe it is, because I think they're all barcoded as well, which isn't the whole reason why I rang, but the other reason is you've had people saying you should be made to vote. If there's nobody you want to vote for, then how can you vote? And if you're voting just to keep somebody out because you don't really know who to vote for, you'll end up with the situation we've got now.
Well, do you think there should be a none-of-the-above box as a compromise?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Tracy, I appreciate your call this morning. Good luck with the traffic. 08459 455 555. I'm getting confused and indeed slightly concerned about this. We may be making a mountain out of indeed what could be described as a little molehill. But can they trace who voted for what and who wrote what on their ballot papers? 08459 455 555. Coming up, we're going to have Justin Dealey arguing with William Hanson. That should be fun, shouldn't it? Shouldn't it?
Call 08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Well, the phone lines are really, really busy, so let's crack on. I imagine the last 30 minutes we'll be dealing with moustaches and we'll be dealing with voting. Possibly a couple of other things, but they are our main thrust. So, let's crack on. Men considering taking part in Movember would do better to hold a bake sale or give money directly to charity, an etiquette expert has suggested. William Hanson said participation was not advisable for men who wanted to be taken seriously in the workplace. Actually, here's how I put it earlier on in the show.
Getting a novelty massage was really not advisable, especially if you have a serious job. I'm yet to see a man who looks better for growing the moustache, and I think a lot of men enjoy it, and I do as it means, like, the same time shaving in the morning.
Are you doing a voice?
That's Hanson. Well, and we're joined now by Mr. William Hanson on the line. Good morning, William.
That's absolute slander. I don't sound like that at all, Ian.
You're right, you're a little bit more nasal. Now...
Get you, tongue with a tang.
It's a fair summary of your views, though, isn't it? It's in the Times, for goodness sake, William. What on earth are you banging on about?
Yeah, well, the Telegraph, actually. But yes, it's in the Telegraph.
Thank you.
And that is my views. It does... I mean, Movember, you know, it is... I must stress, and I cannot stress this enough, so please nobody phone in and get across on this point. It is a very worthy cause. However, there are other ways that you can make money and raise awareness for it than looking a little bit silly for a whole month.
Now listen, I'm kind of sitting on the fence in this one because I do get annoyed when the email goes around work. Hey, I'm doing Movember. Hey, I'm doing the marathon. Hey, I'm doing this. Can you spare a few quid? Oh dear. But someone who feels very strongly about this is our reporter, Justin Dealey. Justin, you're through to William Hanson.
Hanson, you are an absolute disgrace, aren't you? What are you talking about, Hanson?
How dare you? And you can call me Your Majesty rather than Hanson, thank
Please.
You very much.
But you're talking absolute rubbish.
No, it's not rubbish at all. It's my opinion, and actually I think anyone in their right mind will know that actually some stupid handlebar moustache, when you go and see your lawyer and suddenly he's got a stupid handlebar moustache for the whole month of November, it's not necessarily a smart look.
I think he'd treat you with more respect.
Well, no, I'm rubbish.
William, is part of the problem, and please don't take this as a personal critique, is part of the problem the fact that you have bum fluff, you can't grow facial hair?
How rude. I actually, my stubble and, you know, beard area grows very, very quickly, and I can, you know, this morning when I've shaved, even by 5 o'clock, it'll look like I haven't shaved, because I've got so much testosterone in me, it grows very, very quickly. But I, you know, I don't want to look like one of the village people, and so that's why I shave every day.
OK, well, listen, Justin, you've been out speaking to people in Harpenden. What have they had to say?
Yes, most people think that Hanson is talking rubbish. Here's what people had to say.
Terry, how long have you had a tash for?
2 months.
How does it feel to have one?
Warm.
So you wouldn't change?
No.
Because William Hanson, the etiquette expert, is saying that people like you, who have a moustache, when you go into work, you're not taken seriously. In your experience, what's happened since you've had this tash?
Opposite, really. People actually come out and speak to me more.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. Where I had a younger-looking face, people didn't really take me that seriously. Now I look older, people take me more seriously.
And just lastly, is that your partner behind us?
That it is, yes.
she's not listening.
No.
How does she like it?
She loves it. She loves it. I shaved it off once and she wants me to grow it back.
She's now obsessed.
Yes.
Terry, we like you. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate
it. That's right. Thank
you. So you agree with William Hanson's views. Can you tell us why?
I just think moustaches are out of date.
So if you went into work today, you think you wouldn't be taken seriously?
Probably not.
Graham, if you don't mind me asking, what do you do for a living?
I'm an accountant.
Okay, so what do you think would happen if you turned up this month and you had a tash? Do you think you'd still be taken seriously?
Yes.
You think you would do?
Yeah.
Because it's Movember, are you tempted to grow one?
I can't. Look at that. Hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. It's really? A football match, 11 aside.
So you try before then?
I can't grow. I just haven't got enough facial hair. Mm. You do all right.
So some people, William, actually agreeing with you.
Well, you know, it's been said before. Sometimes I say things that people agree with, and I'm very pleased that one gentleman in your quite biased piece actually did agree with me, and you know, he will go far in life.
Justin, William does have a point, doesn't he? That people do look ridiculous with moustaches. If you want to grow a moustache for Movember and you've got a sensible job, why not just write them a cheque for 50 quid or 100 quid? It does look silly, doesn't
Come
it?
Come on, it's the taking part that counts. You know, this month, everyone knows about this month. It's in its 10th year. It raises millions of pounds for a fantastic cause. And you know what? It's fun. When people go into work and they're growing their tash, people look at it every single day. They may give more as the month goes on. That's what it's all about. It's about fun, Hanson. Come on.
Yes, but at the end of the day, you have a serious job to do. I mean, okay, yes, you lot are in the media, so it's all a bit, you know, lovey, and it's fine, perhaps, Sorry. Over there. But in a serious job, you know, something like, you know, where you have to wear a suit into the office.
We spoke to an accountant there. He said to me, as an accountant, if I went into work and I had a tash, people would still take me seriously. He's an accountant. You can't get more serious than that, can you?
Well, you know, there's going to be an exception that proves the rule. But it's. I mean, the people that have moustaches 24/7 is perhaps, you know, you are used to it. But all of a sudden, all these people that suddenly think, oh, I can't be bothered to shave for a month, so let's call it Movember. And suddenly they've got a moustache. And that is when it looks ridiculous.
Ian, can we take this man out? Show him a good time.
Oh, sorry. What does that mean?
Come on. Let's take him out. Show him life.
If what you two want to arrange on your own private time is up to you. Justin Dealey, thank you very much indeed. William, just stay on the line because for those who may have missed it, a couple of minutes ago, we played my impression of William. Well, Lynn has called in. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Ian.
What did you think of my impression of Mr. Hanson?
I thought it was brilliant and absolutely spot on.
Wasn't it just?
Yeah.
Shall we have a little listen again?
Oh, please, yes.
And it's disappeared. Hang on. Oh, no, here we go. Here we go. Let's have a listen. This is me earlier. Getting a novelty massage was really not advisable, especially if you have a serious job. I'm yet to see a man who looks better for growing the moustache, and I think a lot of men enjoy it, and I do as it means like the same time shaving in the morning.
You doing a voice.
That's Hanson. William, can you say something?
I don't think that Rory Bremner's job is in threat after that.
Oh dear. Well, he's a bundle of joy, isn't he, Lynn?
Yes, really. I mean, people should be able to raise money like that. I think it's for a brilliant cause. And, you know, what's wrong with having fun in the world? Doctors do it. Everybody's doing it.
So. Bees do it. Even educated fleas do it. Let's do it, William. Let's fall in love.
No, thank you.
William, thank you very much indeed. Lynn and Hazelmere.
Across beds, hearts and bucks.
This is Ian Lee.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Oh, I missed this email from Mark, sorry. The posh guy that comes on near the end of Ian's show sounds like Bane from the new Batman movie. Really, he does. Ask him to say the word quiche and put it into a Batman-style saying. I can't think of what Batman-style saying there would be. Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC Three Counties Radio. I would imagine the last 20 minutes of the show or so will be taking up with your calls on moustaches and probably your calls on voting. Russell Brand last week, of course, said... By the way, what has happened to Newsnight? Newsnight has become... it's become all frothy, hasn't it? Kirsty Walk apparently doing the Dancing to Thriller. They had Muppets on there. I don't know. They set it up like to look like a greenhouse.
Do you think they're trying to appeal to a younger audience?
Yeah, and I think they're failing miserably. I want Newsnight to be stuffy and serious and report good quality journalism.
You want them to be telling you what's what, not trying to be down with the kids.
That was what the 11 o'clock show was all about, and boy, we failed there. Anyway, Jeremy Paxman said he didn't vote once in a while. We're on the subject of voting. Do you think it's ever acceptable to not vote. And also, we had an interesting call from Carol earlier on, who went to vote, didn't agree with anybody that she'd be voting for, so she wrote on a ballot paper, "I'm not voting for any of you because I disagree with all of you." Folded it up, put it in the box. A week later, someone phones her up and says, "Yeah, what's going on? What did you do that for?" Can they see who's voted for what? I thought it was anonymous. Lisa's in Boreham Wood. Good morning, Lisa.
Morning, Ian.
Does this
morning.
Surprise you?
Well, I too thought it was anonymous. And a few years ago, I was out in the front garden. The canvassers were up and down the street, and they missed me out. So I said to them, "Is there any reason why you haven't knocked at my front door?" So he looked down through his list, and he said, "Because you didn't vote for us last year."
Oh.
So I said, "So how do you know?" So he said, "Well, after the vote, we get to know who has voted for said political party," which I thought was a little bit off, to be honest, because I too thought it was an anonymous vote. But apparently, according to your voting card that you get through your letterbox, that's got a serial number. That's then ticked off at the ballot station, and the number is then put onto your voting slip.
I'm finding this incredible. I'm finding this absolutely incredible, Lisa. If this is true, and I'm hearing stories saying it is, but I'm holding off just because it seems so unbelievable.
Well, I got in touch with the voting system at Hartsmere, and I was told that, and I was, to be honest, Ian, a bit disgusted, actually, because how I vote, and there's no point having a little secret cubbyhole when you go into the polling station. So I did air it, and I did air it with a few of the local town councillors, and again I was getting the same feedback. At the end of the vote, all the town councillors know who you voted for.
What do those voting booths that come out three times a year, what happens to them for the rest of the year? Where are they stored?
They're stored in a very secret place. I don't know.
They've got to take up a lot of room for not much usage, haven't they?
Well, you look at the PCC vote. I mean, how many people turned out for that?
It wasn't a great turnout, was it, Lisa? Thank you very much indeed. I bet there's some sad sack that's got a voting booth set up in his home. Probably Hanson, knowing him. 08459 455 555. I'm holding off believing your stories because it seems so incredible. Am I being naive that when you go and vote, they know who's voted for? Hey, listen, it's not any great skin off my nose, really. But I'd always been led to believe that the voting system in this country was anonymous. And we're hearing, well, several stories now this morning that perhaps it isn't anonymous at all. Someone phone up and tell me we've got this wrong, please. I don't want to take the pill. I don't want to enter the matrix. 08459 455 555. It's 9:15 exactly. Don't forget, you can download the weekly best of podcasts. There are normally four or five up at a time. They last for about 30 days and then they disappear. You can go to the BBC Three Counties site and click on the podcast link. Or if you're on iTunes, just type in Ian Lee BBC, IAINLEE BBC, and you can download it there. On the subject of voting, Mick is in Watford. Good morning, Mick.
Morning.
Mick, what would you like to say?
Well, when I was telling your research about 12 or 13, I used to be a runner for one of the parties. That's before people had all these cars and stuff.
What's a runner for a party?
In them days, they used to send you out to knock on somebody's door if they hadn't voted.
Yeah.
To get them to come out and make sure they vote.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
Right. Well, I used to get sent to somebody's house, given a number in a street, and I would go and knock on the door and say, have you been out to vote? And can you get there? And if not, can we... Some people didn't have cars, so they used to get a car out and perhaps take them around if they couldn't walk that well and things like that. And what I'm trying to say is they used to send me there. They didn't send me to the opposition's houses.
No.
They only sent me to the houses that they knew who had voted for them in the past.
Now, is that, Mick, because they knew they had voted for them in the past or because they had expressed an interest in the past?
Because they knew.
Were you shocked by that?
Well, I was only 12, 13.
Hang on a minute. When was this? In the 1930s or something?
No, a bit later than that. Come on, I'm 71. I'm not...
Oh, okay. So it's kind of 50 years ago then?
Yes.
Wow. Incredible.
I just thought it was common knowledge that after the election, on the day it may be a secret ballot,
yeah.
But afterwards it's not, because they go through all the papers.
Mick, do you think it should be made compulsory to vote?
No, because I think people would probably, those that are made, would vote for people that they didn't know weren't interested in anyway, and it wouldn't help anything, because people would be voting. Pick them up. Some people think they're Tories, but they're not. You know what I mean? If all the working class voted for the Labour, which used to represent the working classes, perhaps it doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
Labour would be getting every time, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Because there's more working class than there is middle class and upper class. A lot of people, because they, when they bought their. you're going to get some phone calls now. Ooh. When Beale bought their council houses under Thatcher.
Yeah.
She done that to turn them all into Tories. Because once they bought their council houses, they thought, no, I'm not working class anymore.
Yeah.
I'm a Tory.
Yeah. You might have a point, Mick. Thank you for that. John's in Carrington. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
John, what would you like to say?
Nobody knows how you vote unless you tell them. It is a secret ballot, but there is a process. Yes, when you go into a polling station, ignore the political parties at the moment, when you go into a polling station, you give your name to the officer, and he marks, or she marks, your ballot paper number on the counterfoil. Not on the ballot paper, on the counterfoil.
Right.
The ballot paper then goes into the ballot box when you've marked the cross, and the counterfoils are all sealed, and they go in sealed envelopes. And they can only be opened on the instructions of a court. Now, after an election, the political parties are allowed to look at the electoral registers that are used at elections to see who has voted. So if you go and vote, yes, the political parties, by law, they're entitled to look at them, and they will know that you voted. Or they'll know.
But they won't be able to tell from that who you voted for.
They will not know how you voted.
Then
and, you know, I'm sure we've all stood at doorsteps and said to a political party, yes, don't worry, I'll be voting for you. And doing exactly.
But then, if we believe Carol's story, I don't know if you heard it. She went in and she said, she wrote on the ballot paper, "I'm not voting for any of you. I don't agree with it," or whatever. And then a week later, a political party phoned her up and said, "Why did you write that?"
I have to say that when you're going through the ballot papers, people can see, you know,
right.
that what's happening, but they cannot. They will not have known who she was. And whether she told the story to somebody else or not, I don't know.
Right.
But I have to say, if it had happened on any election where I had responsibility, then I would be undertaking an investigation. Nobody should know who has voted or how they have voted unless by order of the court. And that's only done in very extreme circumstances where there's been a voting irregularities.
Should it be compulsory to vote, John?
I spent most of my working life trying to encourage people to vote as part of the democratic process. But no, I don't think it should be compulsory. I do think politicians should get their act together and make it worthwhile for people to vote.
John, thank you very much indeed. Well, Justin Dealey has been out getting opinion as this. And Justin, earlier on in the programme, you spoke to people over the age of 40, 35. Are you there? Oh, where has he gone? Justin? No, we've lost him. We'll get him back. Anyway, Justin went out and spoke to people. They were significantly over the age of 35, weren't they, Justin?
They were indeed, yeah.
And they all said, what were they saying?
Well, the people we spoke to earlier were saying that they do use their right to vote, and they go out and they vote every single time. We had a conversation, and you were saying, well, you know, with the greatest amount of respect, Justin, those people over the age of 40, they are bound to go out and vote. It's the people under the age of 35 who don't bother. So in the last, 20 minutes or so, I have been talking to people under the age of 35, and here's what they've had to say.
Right, Sophie, how old are you?
25.
Do you vote?
Yes. We voted last time when it was all on the television debates and we were at House at Uni, so we all got involved and did it that way and went up together as a group and voted.
Because Ian Lee, our presenter, is saying most people under the age of 35 don't bother. In your experience, is he talking rubbish there?
I think when it was the last general election, they had everything televised. I know that everyone in my year at Uni got involved because it was a lot more accessible and easier to understand because it was televised. So I think if they carry on doing that, it will involve the younger generation.
Very personal question again. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
22.
22. Do you ever vote?
No.
Can you tell me why you don't vote?
Because I don't really, care that much.
Nicola, how old are you?
26.
26. Do you vote? And be honest.
I haven't, actually, because Luton screwed up my electoral vote thing last time.
But if they hadn't have screwed it up, as you so politely put it, would you have voted then?
I would have if they'd sorted it out, yeah.
And do you think, again, that younger people are stereotyped into not really caring about this country, when in actual fact, people like you do care about this country?
I think it is stereotyped, though, Barbara. I think there is some truth to it.
You're 30.
Yeah.
Do you ever vote?
Not really.
Can you tell us why you don't vote?
Just don't.
So you just can't be bothered, really?
No.
Do you care about this country?
Yeah.
Surely if you cared, you'd go and vote then, wouldn't you?
I guess so.
But it's not even something that even comes into your mind. When you get that card, just go straight in the bin.
Yeah.
I don't think you... This argument about if you cared for the country, you would vote then, it's an invalid argument. It's a weak premise, Justin.
I don't think so. I think, you know, I think most people have an opinion about the way that this country is run. You have an opportunity to go out and vote to try and make a difference. So if you did care about this country, in my view, I think you certainly would use that opportunity and go and vote.
Here's the thing. OK, so you live in an area where let's say it's a huge Labour majority. OK, four elections, they've won by a landslide of 10,000-15,000 votes.
Yep.
Your vote, if you want to vote Tory or Lib Dem or UKIP or whatever, your vote will make no difference whatsoever. So then why should someone go and vote?
Let me flip this round. Okay.
Or answer that question.
Okay. What is your dream job? What is your absolute ultimate dream job? Okay, if somebody said to you right now, you can do this, obviously you're working on three counties, but in a year's time you could be presenting a TV show. What would that TV show be? Come on.
It would be the Ian Lee show.
Okay, come on. What would it be?
It'd be a chat show. Let's say it's a chat show. Yeah.
Okay. So if somebody said to you, well, there's no point, Ian, you know, you got no chance of getting in there, there's other people that might be before you, would you just give up? No, you might try. You've got to try to make a difference. In many ways,
Justin, I have given up on those dreams.
But you know what I'm saying? It's the same principle. You know, if somebody says to you, well, you know, if you go and do, you've got no chance. Well, yeah. At least try. Come on. At least try. Awkward silence. Can I go now? Not this again. Come on. Ian, I don't like this game. Come on.
See you tomorrow, Justin.
Bye.
Hey, listen, I'm going to go for a posh fry-up afterwards. Do you want to come?
Please.
A posh one?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying. Thank you very much indeed. 08459 455 555. Too late to call me, but now will be a cracking time to start getting your calls in for Jonathan Vernon Smith. He's talking about two-year-olds going to school. Good idea or bad idea? Can you believe there's an organisation that thinks children shouldn't start their education until seven? It's too late by then. It's too late. He'll be talking about that. Right, that's it. That's your lot from me. Send me an email if you want. ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. JVS is up next. Until tomorrow at 6 o'clock from me. Ta-ta.
Local and vocal across Beds, Hearts and Bucks.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.
Thank you, Ian.